Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. We're taking a break from the U.S. men's national team and rightfully turning our attention to the greatest sporting spectacle on earth, which started earlier today. Our emphasis will be our CONCACAF brethren. We talked about why we're doing this in episode 10, so you can get a full dose of the rationale there if you are so inclined. But here we are. Costa Rica has a potentially decisive opening match with Serbia at 7 a.m. Sunday. Mexico faces the reigning champs, Germany, 3 hours later. And then Panama goes like a lamb to the slaughter Monday against a fearsome Belgium side. So it's game on for CONCACAF. Greg and I will convene later in the episode, but we'll kick off with a special guest, Hercules Gomez, the former U.S. national team striker and current ESPN analyst. He joined the pod a day before he flew out for Russia, graciously, I might add. One piece of news that's come out since then, which is something we kind of discussed, is that Diego Reyes, one of El Tri's defensive midfield options, has been scratched from the roster with a lingering hamstring injury. So one of the keys to success for Mexico, shoring up the defensive midfield, has gotten marginally more difficult. Anyway, here's the chat with Herc. Welcome, Herc. Thanks for joining the podcast. Really appreciate it. I know it's a busy time for you. You're headed to Russia tomorrow. Well, I guess...
Yeah.
You're headed to Russia tomorrow, depending on when people are listening to this, to cover the World Cup for ESPN. What's on your agenda? Which games are you planning to see in person? And yeah, go ahead.
Well, I will be, as far as Mexico goes, that's as far as I'll go into the tournament. I will be working for both domestic and English for ESPN, ranging from ESPN FC, SportsCenter, digital, all different types of platforms, and in Spanish for Deportes, you know, all the shows that they have that I've been a part of there. So it's going to be quite some work. It's going to be pulling double shifts. We're going to have to pull in the time that we are in Russia, you know, catering the times after the game. And then when it comes prime time in the States, whether it be SportsCenter in English or different various shows in Spanish to cater to the audience out here. So it's going to be a whirlwind, but I'm looking forward to it. It's my first World Cup as a, I guess you could say, media member. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a badge of honor, so I'm excited. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun. I've been to Russia before, but I've never been to Moscow, and I've never experienced this. I've experienced the World Cup as a player, but I remember friends and family in the 2010 World Cup telling us how just fun everything was, how crazy everything was, you know, and I'm very excited to experience that side of it.
Yeah. It's probably different. I mean, when you're a player, you're a little bit more serious, right? More disciplined about everything?
Well, yeah, you're definitely disciplined about everything, but you're more in your own bubble. Mm-hmm. You don't realize what's going on around you because you're so focused on what's happening within the team, whether it be formation, system, you know, trying to get healthy. And what I mean by that is recuperation, you know, therapy. Everything revolves around your team, the game, your objectives, that you forget, and I say this with the utmost respect, that you're actually at a World Cup. Mm-hmm. You don't get a chance to follow other teams like you would if you were a fan. Now, I'm going to be a media member covering Mexico and you know, all facets of different platforms, but I'm also going to be a fan down there. I'm going to get to see some pretty cool things and experience some pretty cool things and get to soak it all in. And, you know, if I'm lucky enough, maybe experience some other games that maybe Mexico doesn't participate in. So I think I'll get a different taste for it, maybe enjoy it in a different way.
Yeah, that's cool. I see the third and potentially crucial Mexico-Sweden match is in a place called Yekaterinburg. It's the furthest east of all the cities. That seems like it's pretty far out there. You got all your sightseeing lined up for the basically Siberia?
It's funny you say that because I've been to Russia before, and I've gotten as far as Krasnodar. In Krasnodar today, we did a security briefing, you know, these meetings you have to do when you're part of any type of event like this for ESPN. And it's pretty much that area I was in 2012 is now like a no-fly zone for anybody but Russian citizens. They're in some sort of conflict. There's like a conflict area. So when you talk about going out east or down south or being like in the second game, it gets pretty crazy because when you once you get removed from Russia, that's where it becomes, and this is also my ignorance speaking, but very wild, wild west. Yeah. And as far as we've been briefed, you don't know what to expect. You're still in a country that us as Americans, we know very little about. So part of the cool thing for me will be experiencing these different sides of Russia.
Yeah, totally. Let's talk about Mexico a little bit. Osorio hasn't settled on a consistent lineup. I mean, you've been talking about this for months, and people talk about that as a disadvantage. But couldn't he just be a mad genius who's disguising his intentions ahead of the World Cup and has all the chess pieces lined up?
Well, disguising his intentions on purpose or not, there's no doubt about it that there is a method to his madness, and many do refer to him as a mad, whether it's genius or something else, that's definitely a reference point with Juan Carlos Osorio. Listen, we're going on 48 games, and it's for sure going to be a 48th different lineup. You have all kinds of things surrounding the Mexican national team at the moment. People don't really know what to make of the injuries and how actually injured are certain players. Will they be fit enough in time? Why doesn't he settle on a nominal defensive midfielder type player? Why does he do certain things that he does? But if you can really question the qualifying process, and if you can really question that at this point in the World Cup, heading into this World Cup, they are better off than they were 4 years ago. These things he has going for him. The one thing he does not have going for him is his elimination record. When it counts the most, leaves a lot to be desired. We're talking about 7-0 versus Chile in the Copa America. We're talking about 4-1 Confederations Cup versus Germany. We're talking about a loss versus Jamaica in a Gold Cup, be it whatever team it may be. The Mexican people have it out. Just the general public has it out for Juan Carlos Osorio. The Mexican press has it out for Juan Carlos Osorio. He's got tons of injury concerns. He has this Mexican fiesta that happened after the Scotland game hanging over his head. There is so much doom and gloom and just such a dark cloud surrounding the Mexican national team at the moment that one would say it's lining up pretty easy for them to have an abysmal tournament. But in typical Mexican fashion, this is the way it's been every single World Cup and in more difficult groups, and they've gotten out. If there's one consistency with the Mexican national team at the World Cups, it's since 1994, it's Brazil, it's Germany, and it's Mexico who have consistently gotten out of what it is, the group phase of the World Cup. So I don't really know what to expect with Juan Carlos Osorio and with Mexico. They could very easily go 3-and-out. But I could also see them meeting up with Brazil in that fourth game to make it to that fifth and final game. I could definitely see them beating Brazil because they're that type of team. And against Brazil, they've had very good history as of late. But we don't know what to expect. I think that's a scary thing for most people.
Yeah. It's funny to hear you talk that way because I look at, I mean, even these friendlies that Mexico hasn't looked particularly good in, there's just so much talent on the field. And maybe that's just the U.S. men's national team fan in me noticing that and sort of comparing the two programs. But, you know, even when it's not all working, they can just ping, 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 like play some beautiful soccer for a few moments. And, yeah, I don't know. I see a lot to be excited about, you know. But you're closer to it than I am.
No, there's definitely room to be excited because this is Mexico's golden generation. For the first time in their history, they have more than 10 players playing in Europe, as close to some top-flight teams as they'll ever get. They've got the leading goal scorer in their men's national team history in Chicharito Hernandez. They've got very exciting players out in the wings like Tecatito Corona and like Irving Lozano. They've got the most talented player in the Mexican national team in Carlos Vela, who is, regardless of what you think the level MLS is, he is playing with a confidence and performing at a level that the last time we saw this from him was his best years at Real Sociedad. So there is reasons to be optimistic. But when you look at the dependency of Juan Carlos Osorio and what he actually has at his disposal, we don't know who the center back pairing is. We don't know what the lineup's going to be, the starting 11. We don't know the system of play. These are things that definitely leave a lot to be desired.
Let's talk about one of those injuries. Nestor Araujo was injured against Croatia. He's definitely not playing in the World Cup. Can you talk a little bit about what kind of a blow that was for Mexico and why?
Definitely. So when you lose a player like Nestor Araujo, who Juan Carlos Osorio says has the capacity to play in a top team in Europe, who was one of his most dominant players as far as playing time, who was one of his discoveries, you're losing a player who has great aerial ability, who's very clean with his feet, who's got good pace on him, who's got a good understanding and tactical awareness of how the position needs to be played. If you're asking me, they just lost their best defender.
Hmm.
Now, a team that doesn't necessarily rely a lot on its defensive strength, you've just gotten weaker defensively. This now causes a domino effect, because Nestor Araujo was your best defender. Who do you put alongside of Hector Moreno now? By the way, Hector Moreno has his own injury woes to worry about. He has yet to feature so far in the send-off series for Mexico. He's strained. They are hoping he will be available for Denmark. But who will it be? Will it be Hugo Ayala? And you have to understand, Juan Carlos Osorio likes players that are systematic. And what I mean by that is, he wants a player, because Hector Moreno is left-footed and manages that type of play, to be right-footed next to him. So that eliminates Osvaldo Alanis, who was actually sent home. He was sent home. He was one of the players sent home right before the Scotland game. An hour before the Scotland game, it was announced that he and two other players would be sent home. Yeah, so it makes you question where that defensive pairing is going to come from. Will it be Diego Reyes? Well, Diego Reyes got injured last week while he was at Porto, and they said it was a 8 to 10 centimeter tear in his hamstring, and that he would miss close to 40 days. We're going on 30 days so far. He's nowhere near. He needs to show that he's physically capable against Denmark. That's the ultimatum Juan Carlos Osorio gave him, or he's not going. So if it's not Diego Reyes, if he's not healthy, who do you put there?
Yeah.
Is it Hugo Ayala, who's seen very little time with the Mexican national team? Will it be Edson Alvarez, you slide in there, who's a 20-year-old who hasn't had a lot of time as a center back? Will it be Salcedo? Will he be the guy who slides in there, who's been playing mostly as a right back? It's a domino effect. Or do you take the chance and put in 39-year-old Rafa Marquez, who Juan Carlos Osorio said is no longer a center back? He is a defensive midfielder for him, because I agree that's the only way you can protect him. You can't have him isolated 1v1 with the type of players you will face, like a Timo Werner from Germany. You can't have that type of thing with Rafa Marquez. You need to protect him. I feel Rafa Marquez is there for one game and one game only, and that would be the game against Sweden, and maybe in a line of five. These are all questions that change. You know, how does the system change now that he doesn't have Nestor Araujo? Do you then go to a line of five and go quantity over quality? It's all these things that now Juan Carlos Osorio has to face that are very difficult for not only him, but for the just general public to kind of swallow and accept.
Yeah. I mean, people are really high on Edson Alvarez, right?
Yes and no. He's shown flashes of being a very good player, but like he's shown at Club America, and for those of you who watch the CONCACAF Champions League, Jovinko's a very special player. But Edson Alvarez made Jovinko's life very, very easy in that series. He made some very fundamental mistakes, diving in too early, leaving your feet in the box when there was no need, leaving your defensive line partner, whatever it may be, the center back in that position, hung out to dry because you were exposed fundamentally in certain tactical situations. These are weaknesses of his, but he's 20 years old. There's a reason Juan Carlos Osorio is so high on him. He's very clean with his feet. He's got a lot of bite for a player of his size. He can play as a right back, center back, or defensive midfielder, and Juan Carlos Osorio loves these type of players. I mean, he's 20 years old. He's got a lot of upside.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a more general question. Who are – it sounds like a center back partner for Moreno is going to have to emerge. I mean, that's a crucial thing, right? But who has to have a good tournament for Mexico to, you know, get out of the group and get maybe get to that fifth game? Because I think that's the
I'm going to give you four names, and then two of them aren't even named. Two of them are positions. Whoever is in a bad partner for Héctor Moreno, they need to do an adequate job. I'm not even looking for a spectacular job. Mexico, in order for Mexico to do anything of note in this tournament, the perfect storm has to come together, and these players have to have the tournament of their lives for them to do anything. That's a reality. I think there are five teams in contention for this World Cup. Mexico is not one of them. Mm-hmm. And then the defensive midfielder position. Whoever has that responsibility, whether it's one player or if it's by committee, they have to do their job. You left home Gaito Vasquez, a defensive midfielder who could have helped you. You left home Jesus Molina, who's supposed to be his replacement, because those were Juan Carlos Osorio's words, who plays that position. He's not there. Mm-hmm. You had players in the pipeline, like Jonah Gonzalez, who could have stepped in there. You chose not to use them. So whoever he chooses, whether it's Rafa Márquez, whether it's Héctor Herrera, Jonathan Dos Santos, or Guardado by committee, they have to do a good job there, because they don't have the luxury of having someone in there like Diego Reyes versus Belgium, who gets turned like a top and is off to the races and leaves their center backs exposed. Mm-hmm. And then it's the two guys on the outside, the wingers. It's your most exciting players. Tecatito Corona, who plays at Porto, and it's Irving Lozano. Chucky Irving Lozano, who's out in Eredivisie. They have to be just demons on the wing. They have to show offensively why Mexico can draw a lot of eyeballs, why Mexico is a contender offensively, why they can play with the best of them offensively. These are the players that need to have, players and position, that need to have a stellar tournament for Mexico to do something.
And they're in a little bit of different situations, right? Lozano had an excellent year in the Eredivisie, and Tecatito didn't have a great year in Portugal. But Tecatito looked really good in the last two friendlies, right?
That's exactly what it is. We're going off based off of form, because what we saw against Wales, he was the best player on the field. He did what he wanted. He's got that type of ability about him. It's never been about talent. With a lot of these players, Tecatito will not be the exception. They have the talent. That's the one position where I feel they're very strong, they're very deep, is when you look out in the wings, you can play Carlos Vela as an inverted winger, which most likely will happen. You could play Chucky Lozano and get vertical, get 1v1 presence. You could play Tecatito Corona, who's very crafty. You could play Javier Aquino, who's very much like Tecatito Corona. Uh-huh. You have a lot of depth when it comes to the play on the wings.
Yeah, I was listening to you give your lineup for that Sweden match in one of your recent pods, and was struck by how crazy it is to contemplate having one of Tecatito, Vela, or Lozano on the bench, let alone two of them, or maybe even all three. I mean, that's just insane for me as an American fan. We have one creative attacker in our pool, and we built our entire qualifying campaign around him. And, you know, you're talking about a lineup with some of those guys on the bench. It's a different...
It's also systematic, because one could argue you put Chucky Lozano or Tecatito Corona or Javier Aquino in a system like the U.S. has deployed maybe in some games, and they won't do as well. It's just the way it is. But they found something in Juan Carlos Osorio where he allows them to be free. He allows them to exploit their traits, and it's been working out for them. Especially Chucky Lozano, who may be the most informed player at the moment and is looking for a big summer move. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would you mind giving me your preferred lineup for the Germany match? Because I think, you know, that's going to be must-watch television in homes across the country.
Yeah, the preferred lineup for the Germany match. So, Memo Ochoa. And then I would go Héctor Moreno, Carlos Salcido in the center back position. I would go Miguel Layun on the left, Edson Álvarez on the right. I would go Guardado, Jonathan Dos Santos, and Héctor Herrera, the trio in the midfield. And that would be a shared responsibility between the three, like they did in Confederations Cup. Mm-hmm. And then I would go Raul Jimenez in the center, Irving Lozano on one side, and Tecatito Corona on the other.
Okay, so Vela starts on the bench in that game.
Correct.
Well, any, I don't want to keep you too long, but any sort of parting thoughts on as you're heading over there tomorrow and what people should look for?
Yeah, I think people need to pay attention to everything surrounding the Mexican national. This is a national team that when it looks like the chips are down, they rise to the occasion. They're, I don't want to say the underachievers, but they're very consistent. They're a team that gets out of the group.
Yeah.
They underachieve in spectacular fashion, whether it be, you know, Argentina, you know, Lopez goal, that was just a wonder goal, whether it's the no era penal, you know, what happened with Arjen Robben, things like that. They or United States 2-1 Landon Donovan goal, they always seem to crash out in spectacular fashion. That's been their undoing, is they can do well, they can be consistent, but when things go awry, they just unravel in some sort of spectacular fashion. So this generation just feels different. It feels like this is the moment for them to get to the fifth game. I know this sounds crazy, and by no means am I saying it's going to happen, but if you ask any Mexican national team fan, you have five teams you can play to go a direct pass to that fifth game, that coveted fifth game. You have Germany, who's an absolute machine, who's a defending champion. You have Spain with that wonderful generation of footballers, and with all this pedigree. You have that French team that's a monster.
Yeah.
That's got some of the best up-and-coming young players in the world. You've got Argentina with a Martian on their team and Lionel Messi. He's a player who could change the game by himself. And you have Brazil. You have this Brazil with a Neymar who's not 100% yet. We haven't seen him at 100%. We don't know what we're going to get out of him. And no Dani Alves, who makes Neymar click on that team, who keeps Neymar's temperament somewhat respectable on that team. Who would you rather face for that fifth and final coveted game? I think the majority of Mexicans, fans, press, what may you want Brazil because of how they played against them historically, because of how they match up, because of all or nothing game. I think they take Brazil. Well, chances are you're going to come in second place if you have any expectations of getting out of this group. Guess who you're going to face? You're going to face Brazil.
Right. It's all setting up. It's all setting up. I got to ask you one U.S. related question having to do with dual nationals. For those of listeners who don't know, Herc did a lot of the reporting around the Jonah Gonzalez situation when he left for Mexico. I got a question about Efra Alvarez. Brian Shiretta at American Soccer Now asked Tab Ramos about Alvarez last week in an interview, and Alvarez is the exciting attacker in the LA Galaxy system. He scored 6 goals in USL and he's only 15. He's an American from California, but he's playing for the Mexico U-17s. I want to quote Tab and get your thoughts because I think it's an interesting sort of dilemma. Ramos said of Alvarez, he is very young and there is no need to pressure such a young player. The U.S. is his country of birth, where he grew up, where he lives, and where he has his friends. I'm sure he is torn. I think Mexico doesn't worry about that. They come here and speak with anyone. I know you've given this a lot of thought. You even went through it yourself. What do you think? Is it better to back off a young kid like that or put on a full court press? And is Mexico more aggressive about this stuff than the U.S.?
There's no question about it that Mexico is more aggressive than the U.S. They also see more value in a player like that than the U.S. You definitely have to respect the player's decision. They are intimate decisions, individual decisions that one must respect. And I could only imagine what's going through his head. And I think Tab is right. You don't want to do a full court press, but you also want to keep tabs on this kid. And you want him to know that there is no need to go south of the border to look for these opportunities. They can be here in your birth country, in your home country. And from everything I've read about him, his comments, the player's comments, also seem to suggest that he is open to a move.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just say you're open to a move, throw it out there in the wind like that, if there's not something behind it.
Right.
I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he's definitely a player that the U.S. should look to pursue. And the new general manager Ernie Stewart, one of his obligations that he said was he would now be more proactive in keeping tabs of these type of players, like Dennis De Closa is for the Mexican national team.
Right.
I think this is great. I think for the first time, Ernie Stewart, who himself is one of these players, he was a dual national, sees value in these players, and he sees what can be and what can be done and how we can help these players. At the end of the day, Efren is going to do what he wants to do and what's better for him and his family and what he feels. It's an intimate decision. But we need to show him that there is value in a player like him in our system. We need to show him that if he switches over, he will be a player we trust and a player we need and a player we can value and a player that I don't want to say build around, because no player is worth building around unless you're a Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo. But he's a player that can be very, very helpful and very needed for our country.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he shows flashes at 15 of, I mean, I know you've seen it too, of just really, really, really high quality.
I mean, the things he does with the ball in tight spaces and how he has that presence of mind and just the audacity and confidence at that age, I don't care what level he's playing at. He's playing against grown men.
Yep.
You just don't do that. He's definitely, listen, he's a better player for playing where he is. And I'm not talking about USL. I'm talking about the Mexican national team setup. It's no reality. They are light years ahead of the United States Soccer Federation when it comes to developing players. Well, now that he's being developed and he's sharpening that iron, I would love to see him get, if he wants, wherever he wants, I would love to see him get a shot at top flight football and see what can happen.
Yeah, he seems awfully close to that. Well, Mr. Gomez, thank you very much. Really appreciate your time and safe travels to you. We'll be watching.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Ah, Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 1 in the key of B minor makes you want to kill a bear and lay it at the feet of the Tsar, huh, Greg?
Yes, it's as Russian as can be.
Russia has its problems, but doggone, it's a proud country, and they saved the world from Hitler by almost single-handedly absorbing his attack in World War II and winning the war. On that basis alone, they deserve to host a World Cup. Here we are. By the time you're listening to this, I think Russia will have played Saudi Arabia. And nobody really cares about that game. Let's start with Mexico-Germany. Our CONCACAF brothers from south of the border face the reigning champs at 10 a.m. Central Time Sunday. We got some helpful high-level thoughts from Herc earlier in the episode. What's going to happen, Greg?
Can I just start by saying how delighted I am to even be peripherally related to something that Hercules Gomez has done? One of my favorite Americans of all time, Hercules Gomez, soccer or otherwise.
Yeah.
Mexico-Germany. I'm super excited for it, partly because of how much of how Mexico is such an unknown going into this World Cup. which is weird to say because they've been sort of the hallmark of consistency at World Cups in the past. Not necessarily like harmonious consistency. It does seem like every major event, Mexico has something that's gone horribly wrong in the buildup. This edition of Mexico's chaos theory is the major problem is the injuries.
Yeah, that's right.
The media kind of had a little bit of fun with their giant party and the moral debauchery, but I think it kind of going.
I'm all for it. I'm all for the moral debauchery. You know.
Yes. Yeah. This is we're talking ancient Rome and like let's bring out whatever
we. You earned it, boys. No, I'm just kidding.
But I think Hercules talked about when you get to the World Cup, the athletes are essentially in a bubble. So I don't think any of that stuff carries over with them. Unfortunately, injuries can permeate that bubble pretty easily. So Mexico losing their starting back line, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I think so too.
So I think for Mexico, the issue is going to be in this Germany game is going to be, can they prevent just being completely undressed in the back? Or you know, can they hold on to the ball long enough that Germany's chances are limited? And I don't know. I'm feeling more and more pessimistic about Mexico nicking a result for sure.
Yeah. So the question for you is, are they just going to get like played off the pitch?
Or right. I still think they should play like as though they can get a result. I don't think they should essentially, I don't think Mexico can play that way. So I think they have to play like they can get a result. My big thing is going to be if things are going poorly and suddenly they find themselves down 2-0, do they completely implode and it turns into 5 or 6-0? Germany did that to Portugal 4 years ago, and that effectively knocked Portugal out of the tournament. Portugal fought and scrapped and were still alive on the last day of the group, but they needed so much goal difference to make up that, almost all but mathematically they were eliminated. So that's going to be the thing for Mexico is, are they going to be able to sort of shift their focus if the game's not going well and do some damage limitation?
Yeah. It makes you wonder if Osorio should park the bus. I mean, you're saying you don't think they can play that way, which maybe is true, but having watched this last send-off game, the one in Copenhagen against Denmark, they looked like a team who could be undressed, I thought. Now it's not that they looked terrible all the time, but they just looked susceptible.
They looked that way in the Confederations Cup too. It's almost like they average a really high number of like individual breakdowns per minute. Like if that were a stat you could keep track of, they're averaging like half an individual breakdown per minute. I don't think there's any way that they should try to park the bus. You'd basically be turning whatever strength they do have into additional weaknesses. I think they have to essentially go all out into the attack and win a game 3-2 or to, tie a game 2-2. There's no way they could absorb pressure. They're just not built to absorb pressure for 90 minutes. They're not even built to absorb pressure for 10-minute spells.
Yeah, well, brother, it's going to be bracing stuff then. The center back situation is as Herc mentioned, Nestor Araujo was injured in the Croatia friendly. He was Osorio's favorite center back, strong, fleet of foot, and good on the ball, and smart. So you lose him. Who slots in next to Hector Moreno? In the Denmark friendly, they had Hugo Ayala, the Tigres center back, as the right center back. And I thought he looked maybe slightly out of his depth, but basically okay. Would you agree? I mean, he was basically okay.
Yeah, and that's what they need. They just need someone to be basically okay and not have like Omar Gonzalez-style individual breakdowns over really just this one game for me. Like, if they get through this game without a complete meltdown, I think they're going to be okay.
Okay. Well, the goals that came against – the goals in the dangerous situations that came against Denmark – and Denmark looked really sharp. They had Mexico pinned back. They had – everybody was sort of positive with the ball for them. They had Christian Eriksen kind of pulling the strings. the breakdowns that I noticed were in the midfield. There was one chance for Thomas Delaney early in the first half where Ayala played a pass into Jonah Dos Santos, and Dos Santos took a poor touch, and then it was off to the races. The first goal happened, let's see, a missed tackle by Marco Fabian kind of opened up the Mexican defense. And then it wasn't a missed tackle. Like, he slid in, he got the ball, but then it just bounced off him and right into the path of whoever it was who played a pass to Paulson, that big rangy attacker with the ponytail, who took a decisive touch in on his left foot and then hit a perfect curler in on the back post. Totally unstoppable shot. And I don't know, that kind of quality is going to beat just about anybody. And it wasn't really the back line's fault, from what I could tell.
Right. So, and when you're talking about that kind of quality being impossible to stop, like, that's the big worry, is that Germany have that kind of quality to spare. So, yeah. You know, if you're going to give up a couple of chances a game that even a good back line can't do anything about, what happens if you add four or five, you know, self-inflicted chances to that? And I feel like we do have a good example of that from 4 years ago when Germany played Brazil, and like how ruthless Germany can be about punishing those mistakes. That's like my nightmare scenario for Mexico, is that, and Mexico have imploded that way too. And, you know, Herc mentioned their knockout woes in the Copa America, and like, if it gets bad, it can get really bad.
Yeah, that would be totally demoralizing, and it might, like you said, just numerically bring on a three and out. The second goal came as a result of Rafa Márquez losing Christian Eriksen on a throw-in. So Márquez came in at halftime, I think, and his inclusion, is he 38, 39 now? He's a very old man.
Ageless.
Yeah. Well, he lost Eriksen.
Rafa Márquez is eternal.
I guess so, yeah. He lost Eriksen on a throw-in, and as you all know, there's no offsides on a throw-in, so Eriksen was, you know, 15 yards behind the back line when he received the ball, and then he just hit it past Memo Ochoa for the second goal 3 minutes after the first goal, and, you know, there you go, game over.
Yes, if Rafa Márquez is tasked with stopping a Christian Eriksen-caliber player at any point in this World Cup, Mexico are probably pretty doomed. I don't think Rafa Márquez will be looking at those assignments very often.
Yeah. I mean, he just could have, like, ran with him, you know? It wasn't like... And maybe there was a little miscommunication with Salcedo on that. So Salcedo slotted in as... who started the game as right back, slotted in at center left back in the second half of this friendly... And Miguel Layún came on at right back. So it does seem that there's still plenty of Osorio-level experimentation going on all over the field.
Yeah, and some of it's sort of been forced on him. I know he's a tinkerer to begin with, but even if he'd had a consistent lineup all through qualifying, what do you do when you lose the number of players he's been losing?
Right. Yeah. He's in a tough spot. I mean, the Araujo injury, Diego Reyes. Is there any other big one besides those
no,
two?
No, but that's Herc said it best. It's those, the domino effect of now you're pulling Carlos Salcedo potentially out of position. Maybe you didn't bring the right guys to replace those guys once those dominoes start falling. Quite frankly, I think Mexico will now, you know, the same way we rue not calling up Jonathan Gonzalez, I believe Mexico may well rue not calling up Jonathan Gonzalez.
Oh man, that's a take. That's a take for the for the airwaves. Yeah, I mean, you can kind of see that they just lack a little bit of steel in the middle of the park, and it's not like they don't have the quality there. I mean, Dos Santos and Herrera.
Yeah, Jonathan Dos Santos could be called on to really like. Keep Mexico alive in the opening game.
Yeah.
And Memo Ochoa, I think that's going to be the other one. Like, Memo Ochoa could be set up to be a absolute hero in this first game. If he can stand on his head and, again, either limit the damage or help him steal a 1-1-2-2 draw, he'll be more of a hero than he was in 2014 already.
Yeah. He's one of the most popular guys on the team, isn't he? I mean, for the fans, at least.
Has to be.
Well, we've talked about a lot of stuff that hasn't looked great, and I think that one of those things is the midfield. I mean, I don't know a better way to describe it than it just looks a little disjointed, or at least it did against Denmark. The combination of Herrera, Dos Santos, and then Fabian came in at halftime, and so did Marquez. Just didn't seem like it was quite working, but maybe they can iron that out.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that it's just sort of exhibition level effort, and that when they get to the World Cup, everything just goes back to what Mexico do best at World Cups.
Okay, so let's talk quickly about what there is to be excited about. I'm guessing we're going to lead off with Tecatito, because even in this loss, he still looked extremely dangerous.
Yeah, he's my tip for like the shining star of Mexico in attack. I think Memo Ochoa will be Mexico once again with their big personality for the TVs. But Tecatito, I think, will be, whether he starts or comes off the bench, I think will be the biggest attacking impact for Mexico.
Hmm. And we didn't get to see, for those of you who haven't watched much of him, he's just a pacey, but even more than that, technical and tricky winger who beats people and is remarkably strong on the ball for someone as slight of frame as he is. We didn't get to see Vela in this match, in the Denmark match. I don't know what that means, if anything, but always better when he's on the field, the number one best looking man in the World Cup.
Yeah, that is undisputed. So we have Tecatito, who I think we're both really excited about. I'm also excited about Vela. What do you think? Do you think Vela is going to be like invisible, or do you think he's going to have a real have something to say about how Mexico do here?
Man, I don't know. I guess the word is he's going to be. I mean, Herc didn't think he would feature in this Germany match, and he would probably be more prominent in the second and third games of the group, which are against South Korea first and then Sweden. So I don't know. I like to see him on the wing opposite Tecatito, but I'm not the Mexico expert.
That's what I want to see too. I want to see Tecatito and Vela on the field at the same time. There is still that very real possibility that Mexico loses game 5-0 and then go out and smash through Sweden and South Korea in advance anyway. And they have the talent to do that too. They have enough talent where they could, the talent they have in the areas they have it, they could get smashed by Germany and then go on and outscore Sweden and South Korea by 10 goals. And I think at that point, you don't even need goal difference because you're winning. You're going to end up on 6 points. So I also wouldn't read too much into the lineup that he trots out against Germany because, you know, that's such a different opponent that we could see a lot of planned changes regardless of sort of performance. I don't think that performance against Germany will dictate the lineups for Sweden and South Korea.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we'll see Jimenez up top the way Herc predicted it against Germany? Just because he's a little bit more physical, more of a classic hold-up striker than Chicharito?
It makes sense for that. I just really hope that they don't. I kind of feel like if they do that, they are putting themselves in a bad spot. I guess I shouldn't say that. I think that Mexico shouldn't try to play where like they're going to try to absorb pressure and then find their hold-up striker. Like I would rather they just go for the straight-up flowing offense is the best defense strategy.
Yeah. I mean, that would make this a really fun game to watch. It'd be a lot up and down. One last thought I had was when Miguel Layún came in, he seems like a kind of a hothead, and he got that first goal came after he kind of slid in foolishly on the center back and took him down, the Danish center back. And then, you know, it was just like moments later, the ball was coming back the other way and there was a goal. And it did seem like the whole team was kind of distracted by Layoun's vigorous protestations and the whole kit and caboodle around that. So I'll be watching him with a skeptical eye on Sunday if he's on the field.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and trust that again the like Mexican skill of navigating World Cups means that they'll blow up at the right times. They'll protest at the right times. They'll time waste at the right times.
Right. Okay. Do you want to do a prediction or? I don't want to do a prediction. So
I don't want to touch this game with a prediction.
Yeah. Let's not do any predictions. Let's talk quickly about Costa Rica versus Serbia. That's earlier Sunday. And this is a pretty pivotal match for Costa Rica, if I'm not mistaken. Because they have Brazil in their group and they have Switzerland. So they got to get a result on Sunday, right?
Yeah, they need a result here, and they probably need a result against Switzerland. So they'll need to at least get a draw here. If they lose here, that's really close to the end of the tournament for them.
So extremely tense contest. The oddsmakers have Serbia, and you've got to think Serbia's in the same situation. All three teams that are not Brazil need results in both of their games to advance. The oddsmakers have Serbia by a little bit, and that's a team with Nemanja Matic and, you know, the Manchester United center midfielder, and Alexander Kolarov, the defender at, where does he play? Roma?
Is he a Roma now? Yeah, and he was at City forever. Not forever, but he was at City, and he's really fun to watch to just wait for that one time where he has a little bit of space within 45 yards of the goal on his left foot, because it is a cannon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. He plays left back, right? I think he does. Mm-hmm. And they've got players. Serbia has players on throughout their roster playing in big leagues across Europe, sort of an enviable list of flags on Wikipedia. I don't know a lot of them except Filip Kostic, who's at Hamburg, and he's not been terribly impressive, nor has anyone on that team. So what do you think? What do you think Costa Rica's chances are?
So I think the question about odds makers is whether or not they have now sort of corrected for Costa Rica, knowing Costa Rica topped a really difficult group 4 years ago and is basically playing the same team, or whether they're still underestimating them. I don't think – it's kind of funny when – you think of like the Cinderellas of the last few major tournaments. You have Costa Rica from 2014 and then Iceland from Euros 2016. And I feel like the narrative pendulum on Iceland swung so far that now everyone is like talking about what a model Iceland is for other countries to emulate when no one's saying that about Costa Rica. You know, like there's nobody who's talking about what a great story Costa Rica is.
That's funny, yeah.
So my big question is like whether or not the oddsmakers continue to just underestimate Costa Rica, or whether, you know, it really was just a complete and total fluke and they're just going to ride Keylor Navas as far as he can take them. But that might be three matches.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't have any big like tactical analysis on how Costa Rica will attack Serbia or anything like that. I think they'll just try to make life as difficult as possible for all three of their opponents and hope that two draws somehow gets them through.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they could, you know, Marco Arana can create chances. He's not the best at finishing them, but he's great at creating them. And, you know, Brian Ruiz is, you know, who I think we've been remiss in not mentioning as the third best looking man at the World Cup behind Vela and Giroud. He's capable of magic now and then. So they, you know, they could nick a goal. And they'll be set up in their vaunted 5-4-1. Right?
Yes, 5-4-1, wasting time from the opening whistle. And yes, just praying that Keylor Navas has that like extended World Cup 2014 performance.
just CONCACAF anti-football football, basically.
Yeah, and I'm here for it. there's nobody in that group that they're going to knock out that I'll be disappointed doesn't make the round of 16, so I definitely want a Costa Rica run.
It's a tough group, I think. I mean, not as tough as the one they were in last cycle, but you know, Serbia and Switzerland are solid teams.
Yep, there's certainly no easy result here.
All right, last but probably least, Panama is up against Belgium. Like I said in the opener, like a lamb to the slaughter, they're going to be up against Lukaku and Eden Hazard and Kevin De Bruyne, you know, some of the biggest names in the Premier League, and a pretty good defense at the back, too. Who's more likely to get rolled on over the next few days, Mexico or Panama?
Panama. Panama will be, like, on so many video highlight recaps. Like, there are going to be so many Twitter highlights of Romelu Lukaku and Kevin De Bruyne that Panama will have the privilege of also appearing in. That it's actually going to be a pretty productive tournament for Panama. They will feature in more highlights than any other team.
Yep. The ball rippling the net. All right. I don't know how much there is to say about them. I hate to be dismissive, but I do sort of subscribe to the conventional wisdom that there's no chance that they get out of their group. They have also England and Tunisia to play against. I mean, I don't know much about Tunisia, but hard to see them beating England either, or even getting a result.
Yes, this isn't the same England squad that Costa Rica managed to outdo in Brazil. This by all accounts looks like a much more talented, much younger England squad.
Better coached.
Panama are here for the celebration. They're here for the party.
Yeah, and you know, cheers to that.
Yes, it's a party. We are not there for the party. We didn't even make that rung.
We're not here for the party, but we are going to have a party in 8 years. We got the World Cup, 2026.
Here, here.
Raise a toast. Good job, Carlos Cordero. And Sunil Gulati. They accomplished Cordero's first goal, which was somewhat in doubt for a while there, it seemed. At least until the technical report came out from FIFA.
Well, the technical report 8 years ago didn't seem to matter too much, so I still had no idea going in. I wasn't trying to follow all the inner politics of all the federations, but I was very happy to wake up to the news that 8 years from now I'll be able to attend some World Cup games a few hours away.
A few hours away, exactly. You know, I was moaning about this on Twitter earlier. And Charles Bohm came out with his projected list, which included neither Cincinnati nor Kansas City, which means the Midwest would have zero venues. Now, I mean, not that he knows exactly what's going to happen, but I'm going to have to drive. Like, I might as well drive to Alaska, you know, if I want to drive a World Cup match.
Totally true, but I think that's going to be half the fun. Like, you know, I'll be loading up a family and just being like, all right, where are we going to, which World Cup site do we go to first? And then which one do we go to after that?
Yeah, that's true.
It's exciting. Like, it's exciting. I know there's a lot of, there are plenty of criticisms of FIFA, of sort of the side effects and negative effects of hosting things. But man, the soccer itself and the atmosphere is exciting.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. It's an unmitigated victory, I think. And the reality is money does matter for soccer federations, as much as nobody likes to think about that. It does matter, and this is gonna fill the coffers at the USSF. Now, whether we spend that money wisely and do productive things with it is another question, but it's kind of like the first step towards, I don't know, towards progress.
Well, and what's interesting about that, you know, because I think a lot of people are kind of saying the same thing. What's interesting about that is if we are still in the same sort of boat we're in now, 8 years from now, like if we still haven't solved some of these development issues, that's going to be probably a bigger, that's a bigger problem that money probably won't be able to solve. If we can't get our acts together within 8 years and start churning out more elite players, then we're dealing with issues that throwing money at isn't going to matter much.
Yeah, that's right. Continuing with a few more short corners, Bruce Arena is saying things to reporters.
Yeah, Bruce Arena should stop saying things.
Yeah, agreed. I'm on a Bruce boycott myself. Not clicking on any of that stuff. Spain sacked their manager a day before the World Cup starts. Wow.
Yeah, just another comparison point that so many soccer federations are completely inept or, you know, ruled by egos, and USSF certainly not the unique case of like complete, I don't know if you want to call it incompetence, but yeah, that's quite the development on the Spanish camp.
Yeah, I don't understand why Real Madrid had to announce that he was gonna be the manager for Real Madrid a day before the World Cup. Why did they have to do that?
So I just read that some of the Real Madrid players were already aware, because I'm sure some players are involved in, I guess I don't know how it works, but it wouldn't surprise me if some players are involved in the hiring process. Maybe that's an outrageous thing, but then it, a couple of, or at least one non-Real Madrid player on the Spanish side became aware of it, and so Real Madrid felt they had to announce before they got scooped by someone else.
I see.
So it's not great that Real Madrid have done this, but it also seems ridiculous that Spain are going to hold this against a manager that he's lined up a job for once he's done coaching the World Cup.
I'm sure Spain will. Maybe they'll implode in the group as a result of this. Wouldn't be surprised if they did just fine. You know, they got the hosses.
Yeah, that ball seems to already be rolling pretty well downhill for Spain. I don't think the manager change will completely torpedo their World Cup. It could be the difference between, and who knows, maybe they actually get one round farther with a different coach. It can be weird like that.
Yeah. Well, lastly, in this season of CONCACAF marching into Russia, we're not going to stop paying attention to American players, and I got a couple notes on young prospects. Yulianez came on as an impact sub at the half in a 1-0 loss to Orange County on Sunday and really flashed his quality on the wing, created a lot of danger. Having watched Tecatito a bit lately for Mexico, the comparison with Yanez has become more obvious to me. He is, I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's the future American Tecatito. He has that same sort of, you know, the way Tecatito runs in really short, his steps are really short when he has the ball. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. The choppy steps.
Yeah. Really, really short steps, really short, quick steps. And as he's running with the ball, Yanez does the exact same thing. It looks very similar. They're about the same height. They both like to cut in and hit one. That's my shot for Yanez. Still, you know, a long way to go for that kid to get where he's going, but he does look like Tecatito a little bit on the wing.
Bells, I've got like an entire bulletin board, like a wall-sized bulletin board in my place that's devoted to keeping track of your future U.S. comparisons. So we've got Yulianez now is the American Tecatito, mm-hmm. and I've got Andrew Carlton on there as the American Xavi, and I have Josh Sargent on. I don't remember who you've compared Josh.
Lewandowski. Lewandowski.
Yes, Lewandowski. So I have all of these going, and we'll chart them for posterity.
Yeah, it could get pretty embarrassing, couldn't it?
Dream big, Bells. Dream big. Yep.
And finally, we got to see Jalen Lindsay, the 18-year-old right back, go the full 90 in a 0-0 draw at Portland for Kansas City. He's age eligible for the U-20s. I wouldn't say his performance that in that game, which was Saturday night, was eye-popping, thought he was okay. But I think the vote of confidence from Peter Vermes is notable. It was a road fixture between two of the top teams in the West, and the kid played at left back instead of right back, which is his natural position. So just thought I'd make a note of that. Great experience for him, and if he's available, he'll be a big asset for the US U-20s given his apparent versatility.
So are we ready to say he's the American Marcello?
No, I'm not.
Okay, all right. So that doesn't go on the bulletin board.
He's the American DeAndre Yedlin. No, I don't know. I don't put him. I'm not putting him up on a pedestal. I'm watching these kids. I was on somebody else's podcast the other day and put it like this. I'm watching these kids and I'm looking at like who wants the ball at their feet and who wants to do stuff with the ball. You know, who wants to play bravely, in the words of Greg Velasquez. And and that's, you know, I try to be excited about those kids. Richie Ledesma fits that category. I think Giannis fits that category. Alex Mendez fits that category. Carlton fits that category. And I think George Bello fits that category, the left back for Atlanta United too. I don't put Lindsay in that category if we're making distinctions here.
Okay. Well, still one to keep track of. And again, World Cup month, so no one else basically in the universe is paying attention to these games other than the actual coaching staffs of the team. So it's good that you are, Bells. It's good that you're going to keep us posted on all these kids.
Me and a few other people on Twitter and the coaches and players themselves. Anything else we should discuss?
There's nothing left to discuss. We get to sit back tomorrow and enjoy the opening of the World Cup. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I am too. And Sunday, 10 a.m. Central Time, Mexico, Germany. I got to say, if you're a soccer fan in the U.S., it doesn't get much better than that. U.S., Germany would be better, but Mexico, Germany
is. Right, there's one opponent that we could have in that game that would make it a little bit better.
Okay. All right, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks, Greg. See ya.